When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As always, this episode of the 1878 FM podcast is sponsored by Greene King Sport, where football is more than a game. Make Greene King your go-to destination for the season's final stretch. Why? For one, you can watch every televised Toffees game down with delicious food and refreshing beverages. And with 900 sports clubs dotted around the UK, chances are you're within walking distance of your local Greene King. Let's be honest, watching football is way better with friends and family. So get the squad together for every televised Premier League fixture in an atmosphere worth sharing. That includes huge title showdowns, race for European qualification and the nail-biting relegation situation. Pointers. Don't forget to download the Greene King Sports app to enjoy your exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there is a game on. Right, on with the podcast.
Hello, welcome to this, the 1878 FM podcast with me, Ped. I'm joined by Dave Vitti and Sam Avery to look back, look forward, and whatever else we feel we need to have to do to get through this week and the coming weeks. No Baz this week. He is sunning himself on a beach, I believe. Not sure which beach, but it may be a nudist beach. Dave Vitti, what are you saying on this?
Are we allowed to say that he's gone to Florida, or are we keeping that under wraps?
I think you've just told. I mean, Florida's a big place, isn't it?
As long as you don't, it is.
As long as you don't give the house number away or the key code to the villa he's staying in, I think we're all right.
We don't even have to say which coast he's on, because obviously there's two. There's the Atlantic coast and there's the Gulf coast. You know, it's quite narrow as well for those that have been to Florida. As you notice, I'm sort of padding and killing time, because what I'm trying to do is avoid talking about the other night. So the more that we can talk about Floridian geography, that's something I've never said before.
No.
Then I think that's only a good thing. Sam, you'd agree?
I'd agree, yeah. I'm trying to stay super positive at the moment by just avoiding reality and pretending it's a different year. So I'm not really succeeding that well, but I've just had a yogurt and I'm feeling positive.
Yeah, right. What flavour was the yogurt, by the way?
It was a salted caramel protein yogurt, so it tricks you into thinking that you're actually eating something healthy, even though you're not. It's like, you know, high in fibre smack. It's not really. It's just loads of lies.
That's got Aldi Middle Isle written all over it.
That's where I got it. I get my stuff from there.
Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't you? Although I did go in a Lidl yesterday and I was impressed by the bakery. It's one thing Aldi lacks is a bakery.
But are you more of a, because I think this is interesting, right? And again, this is diversion tactics. Do you find that you're either Aldi or Lidl, right? Because I know that I am, and I've been to both, but I'm an Aldi man. That's my team.
Well, right? The Aldi is very close to mine, and I know my way around it. And I think that's a big part of the supermarket experience, is knowing your way around. Because the minute you are confronted with not knowing where the almond milk is, but also too ashamed to ask anybody who works there, it does create massive problems. You need to know the geography of the supermarket. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But that said, I go to Aldi all the time, but I once went to a different Aldi and everything was almost the same, but not quite the same. And I felt like I had dementia. I was walking around and I didn't know where to go. And you can't ask the staff, because they're too busy bashing into you to try and fit whatever it is they're trying to restock. It was a nightmare.
The staff in Aldi, I feel like, not only will they be tested on all the normal things, but I think also that there must be a time set to get, when that call goes out for someone to own the till, they must do a 0-60 or whatever it is. How fast? Don't they do like when you see those American footballers where they do that day of test to see if they're actually any good? What's your sprint speed? There must be a sprint speed from the back where the ale is to the front to get to a till. Because the last thing, till number four is opening, which are great words, by the way. But then you get that lag between you getting to that till and then no one being there and watching the till that you were in get shorter and shorter and shorter. That to me is one of the great, like, frustrations of life. So the people who come to take that, there has to be some kind of speed record for that, I think.
Well, that, and also, I mean, the other thing that they're on a different, well, they're in a different league as far as I'm concerned, and I can't compare them to Lidl because I haven't studied the form, but in terms of other regular supermarkets, the speed at which they scan is just off the scale.
Yeah. Right? Oh, totally.
Which means that they must have intensive training courses for their till operatives because they're in a completely different league. Mm. And the way that they can just get beans and soup and go bang, 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 like a machine.
And it's not just the physical attributes. It's also they know how to read the game and play with you because they spot if you're feeling smug or if you're ahead of it or if you dare to engage in a conversation with someone who's 2 yards behind you and look away for a second, then they just speed up, they go up a gear. They're like Man City. They just go, right, we've got you now. And we just and start throwing but all these protein yogurts that are all the tops breaking and stuff.
Yeah. And if you're using if you're using regular bags, like normal sized bags, which I don't, I'll tell you how my bags work in a minute, Sam, because I don't think you're on that podcast when we last discussed it. Right. Is that if you're using regular bags, I think it's too much for a human to, you know, you're trying to do different bags and the stuff's coming at you and you just can't cope, which is why I always employ, I've got a no bag method, right? Which is not only good for the planet, but it's good for Aldi, for me, right? So what I do, all my stuff goes into my trolley, put it all on the belt, trolley at the end, again, no bags, right? Mm. So then when the stuff comes off, straight in the trolley, right? Like, you know, and all methodically poised. Then in the back of the car, one, IKEA bag.
Oh.
Big blue IKEA bag. And then everything goes straight into the one bag, right? In the back of the car, just for the journey home. Get home, on the drive, IKEA bag over the shoulder, into the kitchen, on the floor, bosh, done.
How many hernias have you had on the way back to the...
It is. It's a bit... It's yeah, if you go heavy, it's a bit hard on the shoulder. But you can drag it in the hall.
I tell you one thing I've noticed as well about Aldi recently is, have you seen the size of the barcodes now? The barcodes are huge. It's because of the self-scanning, which I don't know how I feel about self-scanning at Aldi, but now you're just like, well, you know, it's not that thing of like when you go to the other supermarkets and you're looking for the bar. These barcodes are like, you know, from the, like those films in the 70s where they find like mystery islands with dinosaurs on and all the insects are huge. Someone's creating these giant barcodes. It doesn't feel normal or natural, but it's just the Scandinavian way or the German way, and I'm all for it.
I have barcode blindness when I'm self-scanning. I can't find the barcode, so I'm all for that as well. I hadn't even noticed. I don't self-scan in Aldi because I'd get me big shop there and I'd still be there.
Still be there,
Monday. But just that for me is a real green light.
Fair. I don't have self-scan at my Aldi.
Oh, man. See, I call it the middle-class Aldi because we have the one I go to is sort of in between the studio and where I live, and it's in Gateacre.
Gateacre,
where people on Channel 4 would say, and I call it the middle class Aldi, and they've had them for a while because, you know, you can't inconvenience people in Gateacre for too long. They've got more things. They've got Aldi dealerships to visit. You know what I mean? They've got important things to do, and they haven't got time waiting for someone to get from the back of the Aldi to the front of the Aldi in 6 seconds. They want their stuff then and there and in the back of their Range Rover. And that's the way it should be, I feel, for Gateacre.
That's certainly true for Gateacre. I was down south recently. I was near Watford and I was in the self-scanning section of Sainsbury's, and it was the first time I've experienced that where you get the receipt and then you've got to scan your own receipt to get out the shop. So they've actually done their job for them, and then they don't trust you. And I'm like, you know what? If you can find the Anusol that I've stored on my person, then you are welcome to.
I was in a supermarket in Paris. And honest to God, this supermarket, my missus would not have left this supermarket. Could you imagine like a French supermarket, the bread and the cheese? And the same thing happened to us. We were trying to get out and we're like whacking this thing. And someone was like, you've got to put your, you know, didn't say it like that, but, you know, you've got to scan your receipt to get out of the building, which I thought was, I was very surprised. I mean, that I understand why we don't have that in the Gateacre Aldi, but I was just shocked to see that. But leap forward.
I personally am against self-scanning because
fair enough.
I just, it's not for me, you know, and I personally think, you know, I think it's affecting employment figures, you know, or unemployment figures. And I think ultimately it's just a bad thing. I just much prefer people having jobs, right, doing their impressive Aldi scanning thing. We don't need machines to do that. You know, I'd rather awe at their skills, you know, and having a sort of brief packing relationship with them, so to speak. I mean, I've never used the word packing relationship before, and perhaps out of context, it may sound like the wrong thing, but you know what I'm essentially, you know, alluding to.
Well, because where does it lead? Everything opens the door to something else. And before, like, wasn't it last year they were talking about doing dental work at home? I mean, but like, are they going to have like dentists where you go in and all the gear's there and the chair's there?
Yeah.
Just let you crack on.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, quite literally crack on, I think, you know, if you don't know what you're doing.
I feel like I feel like there's something in that, Dave. I feel like before long you'll be standing outside the town hall with an ex-Southampton player going on about self-scanning.
Well, there's every chance. There really is every chance.
I mean,
it's not even that far removed from reality, Peter.
I think we'll get to a point soon where we'll walk into a supermarket and AI will just know what we want, or a version of what we want, based on, obviously, we'll have a barcode and we'll walk in and we'll know what we got last time, and it'll all just be ready for us. And I think I'm quite happy with that.
That Amazon shop, it was called something like Walk Out When You're Done or something, and it was meant to, like, you pick stuff up, you don't have to scan it, you don't have to pay for it, just take it out your account. And then it came out that actually what's happening was loads of people in a sweatshop in India were actually monitoring stuff with cameras and
It was like this is completely, we already know what you scan the barcode and you walk out and we'll take the money and it's all part of it. And I think it was basically there was a lad in the back just watching everything.
So that makes you think everything that they say is automated. There might just be the self-scanning cells, there might just be a little fella in there just like writing down what you've bought.
It's a little guy, you know.
The guy who played R2-D2.
Yeah, just a really small guy, but bent over, like hunched, because they're only small, aren't they? You know?
And it's actually his voice goes, cashier number 4, please.
Yes.
Well, hang on. That's another thing just before we come off this topic. There was a stage...
Let's not ever come off this topic, Peter. Let's just stay here, please. Hang on. This is a safe space, and I'm much happier than I have been for the rest of the week.
There was a stage in Marks and Spencer's where they changed the voices. I mean, I wouldn't know. I'm a man of the people. I mean, it's one step down from Waitrose, but, you know, you only go there when Wales on holiday. But... they changed the voice of the voice on the scanner machine, so, you know, it was like for comic relief, so they suddenly had Dawn French garlic bread you just
bought. And they had Anton Deck on there as well, didn't they?
Oh, well, of course they did. I mean, if you want, I literally, again, I will slightly go to a different place here. I watched Saturday Takeout for the first time ever on Saturday, because it was the last one. It's only to discover that show is basically an advertisement for every company in the world. Mm. So why wouldn't he have a finger in the self-scanning machine economy?
I was at an M&S self-scanning checkout on a motorway services. Do a lot of motorway service stations in my job. So I'm there and I'm buying a sandwich. And
is it Knutsford?
It wasn't Knutsford.
Because that's on the bridge, isn't it? It's kind of neither on one side nor the other.
Yeah, it hasn't made its mind up, has it? It's just very centrist.
Absolutely. Neither northbound nor southbound, just somewhere in the middle.
Just doesn't know what it's doing. It's just hanging about.
Sounds like Keir Starmer.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's where it gets its steak bakes. But I think it might have been a celebrity voice doing the M&S at that point. So it may have been Dawn French, may not have been. It wasn't the normal voice. And there was a woman next to me. She was quite old. And there was some competition that said, it could be you. Mm. And she just went, piss off, it won't be me. And I started laughing. And I don't think she was trying to be funny. She was just talking to a machine and swearing at it. And that is funny.
That's where we are as a nation now. We've become a nation that moans at self-service.
Swearing at robots.
oh my God. Well, that was a great 10 minutes, lads. Should we just leave it there?
Yeah, just leave it there. See you. Listen, we'll see you again next week. Have a lovely time. There's nothing else really to discuss, is there?
Right, let's just talk about the elephant in the room, as it might be. Friday night. I wish it was Friday night. Monday night, Stamford Bridge. A game where I, and I think other people, genuinely believed we could get something out of this game.
Yeah,
based on Chelsea's current... form, really. And we've gone down there, Dave, and we've basically gone, lads, we know you really like scoring goals. Do you want to see how many you can get against us? Because we're going to be dead open, really open. And all our players are actually going to forget what positions they play in for the night.
Like you, and I'm sure like Sam as well, I felt quite confident about Monday night. I thought that actually the pressure was going to be off. It wasn't going to be one of these must-win games, and I thought psychologically this will be good for us. So much so, without, you know, trying to get into really depressing water, I sort of thought actually there's a lot less pressure on Monday than there is on Sunday against Forest, and I thought, you know, let's go and give it some. And actually, I thought they started quite brightly, and I was encouraged, and I thought, you know what, they're giving it a go. They're not overawed by being at Stamford Bridge, and obviously Beto had that chance that he skied over the bar and.
Yeah,
you know, but it was all looking good, and then suddenly it just all collapsed, and just a catalogue of errors in every department. I mean, if we look at the positives, Cole Palmer has got to be one of the buys of the season, hasn't he?
Oh, that's a real positive. How are you feeling about that positive, Sam?
I'm trying to look at the positives because he looks great, but I mean we're a fucking mess.
What's your thoughts on Cole Palmer, Sam?
I thought he was very good. I can't think of any other positives. The game's over.
That's it, isn't it?
That's the positive. It's over. We don't have to go there again until next season. The positivity that I had was sucked out so quickly. And then I said this on the radio the other day, but basically it reminded me of when I used to play sensible soccer on the Amiga. And when I was like at 16 and I go to the toilet and my mate had unplugged my joystick while I was in the toilet and I come back and I couldn't figure out what was going on, why my players weren't doing what I'd asked them to do. And that's what Sean Dyche was like. Yeah. He stood on the sideline, he didn't know what was going on and he didn't do anything to stop the rot. And he brought subs on at half time, but like it was pathetic to watch. And in the second half, everyone had gone to bed in our house and I'm sat there. I thought, I was tempted to turn it off, which I never do. And I thought, I'm not going to turn it off. I'm going to watch it because I'm only going to end up just checking the score on BBC Sports anyway and just, you know, and feel worse. So I got my guitar out and I never played a guitar, but I just got my guitar out. I had the sound dead low and I was just strumming on my guitar. And then I started trying to come up with a song called The Everton Blues. And I wrote one lyric, which I'll share with you, which is, FFP, PSR, we don't know who our owners are.
It's good, I like it.
And then I put the guitar down and thought, I've probably peaked.
Yeah, that's good.
Now we know why Ned's so good at music, because he just watched Everton his entire life, this version of Everton. Now we know why he's an absolute genius at music. Just going back to your computer game, it felt like, you know, I don't get like FIFA or EA Sports 24 very often, but I bought it this year because it changed and I thought it might be good this. So you pick it up and you go online as a 45-year-old man and you've got all that enthusiasm and you pick Everton as your team and you come up against some kid who plays as, I don't know, Barcelona, PSG, Man City, and basically that's what happens. You go in with all that enthusiasm and before you know it, you're 6-0 down thinking, why did I just pay 60 quid for this fucking game? why did I just do that? You know, it's thinking that, it's the Everton thing of thinking things are going to be different just because in your head you had a positive idea that it was going to be, and yet the reality is that you're too old, your fingers don't work, and these kids are running circles around you. And that's effectively what Everton were on Monday night.
Yeah, 100%.
But it wasn't even like we had nothing going forward, but we were solid in a, you know, park the bus kind of way, which I thought we would be. I thought, you know, if nothing else, we will be tough to break down. You know, I didn't think that we'd have much going forward, but I thought we'd be tough to break down, and they might kind of, you know, eventually get a goal, and one goal would be in it. But it was so different to that. But again, you know, I think a lot of it down to, I thought Cole Palmer is excellent.
Yeah, he was. He's a great player. But you know, when you watch us, actually this, Sam, honestly, knowing you watch us, or you watch, like, if you watch Champions League football this week, or you watch the games last week, Man City versus Real Madrid, that's 3-3, or... And when you watch us, it honestly is like watching a different sport, isn't it? It really is like, you know, I didn't play to the highest standard, but there was times when I thought well about myself as a footballer, and I've turned up to play against a team that, and you think, I've got a good chance today, and you're playing with lads who, you know, the kind of lads who have had trials or who have played for someone, and you just get destroyed, and you see football on another level, and that's to me is what watching Everton's like at the moment. It's like, it's watching people who fully get the game and understand how to put a team together. And I watch us and I just think, if we just picked 11 fellas off the street, you know, and even our good players are watching, just think, you are offer nothing. You know, some of our players will pick the ball up and go for a run. And when you watch good players go for a run, it ends up with something, or they lay it off and then they get into... Ours just end up running into the defender. And I really have no idea as a football team what we are trying to do.
Yeah, it's like watching the same sport but slightly different, isn't it? It's like rugby league and rugby union. Like, I don't know which one we are, but we're playing footy, but we're playing a different code where you don't have to actually have any cohesiveness, and you can play negative football without getting results. Because I mean, some of the football's been so poor, and yet it's not effective. So it's like, what are we doing? What's the point if we're not actually yielding any results from it? But the way the players run around, and horrible to see Branthwaite. I know he had the stinker, but when he came off, and Michael Keane, as they call him in Gaytaker, came on, and you just think, we're back to this again, and it's almost like we're on this horrible time loop where we're back. Where, I mean, how long has it been now where we've been looking at Michael Keane going, he should never play for the club again,
and he did, and he
keeps coming
since
back.
Since he was at Burnley.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but the other nice thing is that when you look at the remaining fixtures, is that not only us and us alone get to enjoy this spectacle of total football, because four of the next six games are televised, are they not?
Yeah.
You know, so the whole world can see just how impressive we are at the moment, and revel in our tactical mastery.
I mean, I've never felt as low as an Everton fan as I do at the moment. I don't mean at this precise moment, because I'm just trying to block it out at the moment. You know, I'm just trying to kind of, like, just almost not dwell on it too much. But just generally, especially when I'm watching the match, I've never felt this low, really, because it just feels hopeless, and there doesn't feel to be any kind of... There's no like light that we're trying to reach. There's the stadium, but even that looks like, with all the ownership problems, you don't even know the direction that's going to go in, and it's really, really demoralizing. And it's a case of when you watch the team like that, and then you look at the results or the fixtures coming up, and you just think, well, can we even get any more points? Can we get? I can't see us winning at this point. I can't.
If we can, maybe that'll change. If we can't, though, then we deserve to be relegated, don't we?
Like, absolutely.
The fixtures are there for us. It's a don't win, aren't they? Let's be honest.
Yeah. There was the one thing which I thought summed up in many ways the mess that this club is in on every level, and has been for a number of years, with historical mismanagement after mismanagement, was to see Dele Alli in the studio.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I wish Dele Alli nothing but the best in terms of his future playing and beyond. I absolutely do. Yeah. But I just thought, here's someone who, I think it's fair to say, has never fully fitted into the club for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there he was in the studio looking slightly dismayed by the whole thing. But I think the thing that got me was where, and this is I think you know what I'm going to say, but this is nothing against him, because, you know, he said all the right things. But when he sort of said about the fact that, you know, that obviously they had to analyze the game as a whole and how good Chelsea were and how poor Everton were. And he used the phrase, you know, and obviously it's not nice to see for my club. And I thought, oh God, it is technically his club.
Yeah,
but he looks so much like it's not his club through no fault of his own. Do you know what I'm trying to say? I'm just a bit like, how on earth has this happened? He's still getting paid a wage week in, week out, because not because it's his fault, because the club and the management structure at the time felt that it was the right move. And you think, well, no wonder we're in this complete mess financially and everything else, if decisions like that, and it just, I don't know. I know it's only a tiny thing, but it sort of brought it into focus for me as I'm sitting there on the sofa trying to find something positive and going, this is a shambles.
You're right, Dave. I actually tweeted at 8:30 on Monday night, 3-0 down after half an hour, and a lad on 100K a week without 90 minutes to his name in 2 years is going to tell us why at halftime. FML. And that's at 5,000 likes. Thanks, everybody.
There you go.
Because it is, it's like, that is the joke of the situation, is that a lad that we don't recognise as an Everton player is in studios. And by the way, he doesn't have, like, and again, I'm not being personal, but the lad clearly doesn't watch football, because when they asked him about the Arsenal game on Sunday versus Villa, he didn't know the game had been played at the Emirates. Like, he was there and it was almost like, how are you, mate? And that's great, no problem with that at all. But I just thought, couldn't you have brought him on a different week when Everton weren't playing and Everton weren't going to get a hide? Couldn't you have brought him on next week's Monday Night Football when it's got nothing to do with Everton? Mm. And actually, you can have a chat with the lad about the overshadowing of actually the club he doesn't play for is playing. And that is just the joke of a football club that we are, that those things happen and that player hasn't played and we don't know what's going to... He basically said, I'm not going to play again this season, but I'd like to stay at Everton. It's like, what's going on here? The whole thing is crazy, but obviously next week, it's a huge week starting from Sunday. And then Sunday, Wednesday, and then Saturday. We know Brentford is Saturday now because City got knocked out. But that's just a humongous week, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. I was chatting to a Forest fan yesterday and I was saying a big game coming up and he was like, yeah. He said, but all right, scoring goals, we just can't keep it tight. And I think he was waiting for me to say something positive about my team. And I went,
that'll be all right then.
Yeah. he still stood there waiting for me to speak.
Yeah.
But just to jump back onto the Dele Alli thing.
I mean,
that's a big mistake that Everton made. There's no, clearly that was a big mistake. But if big decisions are being made incorrectly, I'm sure smaller and medium decisions are being made incorrectly and have been for years. The other thing is that the other signing that has had a bit of game time recently, Beto, especially on Monday, and he just looks so poor. He just looks like he doesn't... I don't know whether it's the system that he's not fitting into, but he doesn't look like a £30 million player.
No, not at all.
He really doesn't. Now, Sutton Knight tweeted on Monday night, it's the first time I've thought this. The first time I've vocalised, the first time that the thoughts crystallised in my mind. But I suddenly thought, watching that game, would we have been better just getting relegated in 98 instead of staying up against Coventry? Just getting relegated, getting rid of Ken Wright, building the King's Dock, and then getting the football club run by adults for the last 25 years. I don't know. Would we be in
I know. I know what you're saying. And it would have been a lot more... If you were going to get relegated, the issues then would have been a lot less than they are being relegated now. We have clung on for so long, but I do fully understand what you get, because the idea of going down a lot. I've heard people say, we could restart, and
Phil have said that, haven't they? And it's been like, I'm not buying that. No, it's I'm not buying that. There's too much risk involved. You can't just do what was sort of feasible in the old days, where it was a bit like, you know what, let's go down for a season, sort ourselves out, get rid of the dead wood, recruit again, and then come straight back up. It doesn't work like that, as the likes of Sunderland have proved in the past, and people like this in the Portsmouth of this world, you could go down and down.
Yeah,
yeah.
And even the top of the championship this season, Leicester looked like they were going to fly back up, and they're by no means going to come back straight back up. None of the promoted teams are guaranteed it at the moment. So even just that there's no way you're definitely going to come back up. And Everton would have to basically sell everybody and start again. And the players he started again wouldn't be Premier League quality. So even if you did come up, you'd need another massive injection. And you end up with Forest then.
Yeah, you then need another, £200 million minimum to get back in.
Yeah. What Everton need to do is somehow survive. And people go, you can start again. Well, why can't you start again in the Premier League? Why isn't that feasible? Why isn't it?
From a higher position.
With the money.
I mean, there's much less risk to rebuild where they are now, still in the top flight. I honestly think that going down would be disastrous. Yeah,
it would
I
be
really
oh, certainly now. And yeah. I think that's why these next few games are just so it's going to be horrible to watch, because if we can realistically we don't need that many more points, do we, to just stay up there? But yeah. it's just because they're all a lot of the games are 6 pointers, there's going to be such pressure, and I'm not sure how our players handle pressure. I'm not sure they thrive under it. They certainly don't seem to enjoy it. So,
see, Brentford are safe now, I think, unless Luton do them on Saturday. I think Brentford will be all right. I think that five point gap is safe. I think it's obviously it's between us, Forest, and Luton now.
Yeah,
simple as that we've
got to be Forest, and we can't be beaten by Luton. I think they're the two major ones, aren't they? And then that sets us up for Sheffield United, which will be the last home game of the season. So they're the two things I think that have got to happen. If it'd be 4 points if we were to beat Forest, we go 4 points above them. And then, you know, you have got that game in hand. I know everyone's will obviously write Liverpool off, but who knows at this stage, the way they've been recently. And then, you know, that's, as I said, if we can't get enough points out of these games, then we will be relegated. And
as you say, we haven't got an unfair run in.
No,
you know, it's in our hands. People have been saying that for weeks, but unfortunately, you know, the games keep passing us by. But yeah, it's still in our hands. You know, with the likes of Forest to play, with Luton to play, with Sheffield to play, there's points to be had there. And if they don't get them, and as you say, they don't deserve to stay up. But the other twist in the tale, of course, is that if they do what they need to do, or you know, more to the point, if they actually avoid the drop by the skin of their teeth, is that we then finish the season still not sure.
Yeah,
they're safe or not.
Well, hopefully we'll have enough points that it won't matter. But who knows?
As you say, hopefully. Yeah, it might not. You know, I mean, to be honest with you, at this moment in time now, if somebody offered us the chance of finishing 17th on goal difference, right?
Yeah,
we'd take it.
Yeah,
yeah,
we'd take it. If there was a cash out now option of actually 17th on goal difference, you take it all day long. Mm. But the reality is that this year, for the first time in the history of the world, it might not be done and dusted.
It's just that it's all leading towards the final home game of the season again. I know last season it was the last game of the season. Mm. The one before was the penultimate game of the season.
Yeah.
But it's that last home game where it's whatever happens. I think it's likely that is going to be a must win.
Yeah.
And then the pressure, like last season was horrendous.
Yeah.
The Crystal Palace game the season before was bad and we escaped. Last season was not fun in the slightest. Even when we won, it was just horrible. It's just going to it's going to get worse. And then realistically we survive and we're probably going to be in a similar situation next
absolutely.
Season. Absolutely. A bare minimum before we can start to then
absolutely
away from the drop.
Yeah, and everyone's beaten down by it. I see that I know that internally. Last couple of years, not last year, but the year before, you know, you couldn't sleep, you're working out all the connotations. Now I'm just like, almost like whatever. So if it was going to another year, and I think most people feel the same, I think the fan base are very much of like, we've done everything we can. We really have done everything we can, and people will still keep pushing things. Wear blue on Sunday and all that kind of thing, which is great. But I do think the fan base are getting to a point now where it is a case of you're the players. Actually, you're the only ones who can change this story. We've done everything we can and you still keep serving us up performances like that. And I think, you know, all the lip service and everything, it only goes so far. It really does. So it's on the players now to change the narrative. It really is. It really is, because no one's going to feel sorry for them. I don't think no one on the outside feels sorry for us, really. And I think we've sort of stopped feeling sorry for ourselves, even with the points deduction. Because now, when we get to a point now, I think most people look at the points deduction and go, okay, maybe we didn't deserve that many points, but we deserve to be punished for our club being as terrible as it has for the mismanagement of it. So we're not going to get any sympathy, but
this is all, you know, talking about the points again, going back to the points deduction at the end of last year, is that It's all a mindset thing. This is what we keep saying week in, week out. It's so much of a mindset and a mental problem within that squad now, because, you know, there was the lift that we saw after the first points deduction. And actually, you know, and it's becoming a cliche now, but, you know, it galvanized the squad, to use that word again. And they all pulled together and as a club, and everybody was a bit like, you know, you were going to get the points back. And sure enough that they did, you know, because it was a different outlook. And I do firmly believe that with the players that we've got, if the mentality was right, we've got nothing to worry about for the remaining games. There's enough points in there. They go at it in the right way, they'll be okay. Yeah. But unfortunately, the mindset's not been right for a while, and the likes of Monday night has then completely shattered the confidence of many within that squad who were borderline beforehand. And this is the thing that is so concerning with the fixtures coming up. You know,
well, I often say, I think mindset and mentality is a big part of what makes good players. They're all technically very good footballers, but it's that mindset, isn't it? It's being able to switch yourself from, you know, and anything anyone does, you know, Sam, you stand in front of people, you know, heckling you and things like that. You're one man standing on a stage. You need a good mindset, don't you? Be a lot of good comics who crumble under that. But, you know, you go and do that, Sam, and that's what might make you separate you from another comic, or having that good comeback to for a heckler to put them down. That's what separates you, isn't it? It's that mindset.
Yeah, I think like any kind of elite sports people have just they've all got to have a certain technical ability, or else they wouldn't even be where they are. They're all athletes, they're all fit, but then you've got it's those little extra 5%. I mean, to go to the complete extreme, watching that, what was the Last Dance, that Michael Jordan documentary?
Yeah.
I mean, he's like a freak, isn't he, in terms of how he convinces his brain to creates like personal rivalries with opponents that don't exist just so he can batter them, which is just unbelievable. So you don't even have to get to that level. But going back to that thing you were saying earlier about, like, it's like watching a different sport. Our players are just, they seem to be bogged down by the occasion. They seem to be kind of... The situation that they're in feels sticky. Feels like they look leggy, they look tired, they look weighed down by it. And it's just, and this is why we end up spending 15 minutes talking about self-service checkouts, because this
I'm happy to do it again.
Dave, you go on, haven't you got something to finish the podcast
I do,
off?
I do. Wait, it might literally finish the podcast off. There was a few questions which I had, sort of changing the subject away, because I think we've dealt enough with the doom and gloom. I was out on my bike the other day, and I was just out getting a bit of fresh air for a few hours. And there was a few things that I saw on my ride. And, you know, when you see a sign when you're riding a bike, you start to think about it, you know, and so I sort of daydream and think about these different things. And there were three things that I saw on this one ride. And I realized that on the way back that I didn't fully understand any of them, right? One was smart water. I'll give you them all first, right? Yeah. And then we can go through them. The first one was smart water. The second one was anti-climb paint. And the third one was cloud storage, which I know is a different kind of world. But then I realized that at the age of nearly 40, Sam, right, is that I thought, I don't fully understand any of these things. I don't know what smart water is. I don't know what anti-climb paint is. And I certainly don't fully understand cloud storage. And I wondered whether
Radio 1 there, Dave, because they sound like bands that I've never heard of that are
Like
Cocker and Polly.
That's it, you know. Hey, we need to cross the Maid of Vale and listen to Cloud Storage.
It's Cloud Storage especially. I don't understand any of those. Smart water sounds that knows where to go.
Well, I think what it is that it's a smart water, I think, in the same way as anti... I think they're in the same area. I think they were behind some big spiky things. I think both smart water and anti-climb paint are all... what do you call them? Sort of preventative, correct. Yeah, they're sort of to stop baddies getting in, ultimately. But I don't know how they work. How does anti-climb paint work? How can you not climb on certain paint?
It just looks down at you very disapprovingly. Ooh, can do that.
Smart water is a traceable liquid and forensic asset marking the system that is applied to items of value to identify thieves. And so it's like, remember the old days when there's like, I don't know, there'd be a film where they're robbing a bank and then they're like, don't get the pack. And then someone gets the pack and all the purple paint goes over them.
Okay.
It's basically, that's what that is.
All right, anti-climb paint then, Ped?
I'll tell you now, but it does sound like something when you start work experience, doesn't it?
Yeah, like sort of like yeah, like tartan paint. And,
someone
you know,
sends you for a bit of, yeah. Go and get some anti-climb paint, please, mate. Yeah, it's legal. That was the first thing that's popped up on Google. It's very much legal.
I just don't really know how it works. I don't know how you can have something that you can't climb on.
Is it slippy?
Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it? You know, so you couldn't.
Yeah, because sticky would help.
Sticky would be good. Like really smooth would hinder your ascent.
It forms a
descent.
It forms a thin skin, helping to prevent leaves and the like from sticking to it. But because it is a big, complicated word, any pressure applied to it will make it return to liquid, making it difficult for an intruder to gain a hand or foothold.
So it's interesting. Well, in fact, do you know what? It begs the question: is I wonder if the two things could be combined, and whether you could have a sort of anti-climb paint that would then become a liquid form of smart water, and then would be indelibly marked on the intruder in question.
It sounds like a Spider-Man villain, I must be honest. I mean, even it's because it's a thixotropic, which again sounds like a Spider-Man villain. Not a very good one, not a poppy one. Yeah. A shite one from the 60s where Stanley was off his tits on LSD or something. But it does sound like something like that. So, and obviously Cloud Storage, as we know, are on tonight.
How does that work?
They're on tonight, 7 o'clock with Joe Wiley.
Oh, sorry, they're on tonight. Oh, you beg your pardon. Yeah, from Maid of Vale. Yeah.
A lot of synths in that band.
Yeah.
Staring and stuff.
Yeah.
Cloud storage makes me think of, you know, those storage centers that you can get now where like those
like Safe Store and stuff. Yeah.
Safe Storage, big yellow one or whatever.
Yeah.
That's a business.
Yeah, that is a business.
We were talking before the cameras were rolling about good businesses to invest in. Storage space. No one would have thought that 20 years ago, but no one wants to throw anything out.
What we were saying as well, you know, crematoriums are, for me, the best investment of all, you know, because as a business, they are always running, you know, all year round. And they're recession proof. Mm. You know, people always need that service without being too sort of dark and mawkish about it. You know, it's just one of those things. And I think that it's got to be a good investment.
How
and
about
you
could... a mobile one?
Yeah.
Crematorium.
Like those old libraries that used to drive around. Yeah. Your house and...
well, yeah. Could... like a sort of vanatorium.
Let's go on Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
Vanatorium.
Yeah, vanatorium.
Absolutely. You know, there's got to be something in that.
You could own the storage space and the creme, and if someone failed to pay for a month, you could just take all the stuff out, take it the creme and burn it all.
Yeah. That's interesting because my mind was working the other way around because I was thinking that actually the what should have ended up in the creme might have ended up in the big yellow safe store or somewhere like that. But yeah, yours makes more sense, Ped, to be honest with you.
That's a process.
That process is more logical than mine.
You could swing both ways, though.
Well, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
It's the threat, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is the threat. Thing. But also for the storage, I mean, I can see a time when people are probably living in, you know, moving out your mum and dad's when you're about
living
20
in storage.
And you're literally just moving to a storage container.
But to be honest with you, I mean, some of them are actually larger and more luxurious than some million-pound flats in parts of that there, London.
Put that on your pamphlet, Barrett's house.
Absolutely.
But instead of a storage space, shouldn't we be encouraging people to have a big deep clean of their house and get rid of everything? Because have you ever done that where you've had like a, what do they call it, like a declutter?
Yeah.
And try and do it at the start of each year and you've just got to be ruthless and throw stuff out. And you're like, well, what's this? It's like an old Breville machine. What's this? It's like all stuff you bought off eBay that you just don't need, like old Garfield books that you've never read. Mm. You know, just get rid of them all. It's quite cathartic. Have you ever done that? Have you ever had a big like... clear out of stuff
every so often? I get everything from my garage is just full of like crap, right? So I get everything out and I put it all out and then I clear it and then I put it all back in again. But it does feel good to be ordered.
Yeah. Fair play. I'm waiting for Stacey Solomon to come round with her 12 kids and get it all boxed off for me, to be honest. If I'm honest, I'm not doing it myself. I want Stacey Solomon to tell me what things I need to throw out.
I think that'd be good.
That's the future. I mean, she's got, she's literally got a show. My missus watches it on BBC One, and you're just thinking, why didn't you use this time clearing the shite out of our house? Never mind watching Stacey Solomon.
Someone else's
who just happens to have 14 sets of false teeth and doesn't know which one to keep. You know, giving them away to charities. I mean, I don't know.
What you don't want to do is end up on one of those shows about hoarders where they have just stacks of stuff, and then like it often falls on people, doesn't it? And then they can't get out, and it's like a big stack of old,
structurally unsound. You know, there's like a whole stack of kind of Now and Zoo magazines and stuff like that.
Well, there's your advert for the creme and the storage. Put it in storage, or you'll end up in the creme. It sells itself.
Yeah, I mean, is there a hybrid word like crematorium or something in there in terms of like all the crap that's? Well, we'll work on this. Maybe we need to have a sort of private off-air meeting in terms of this potential new business idea.
Blue sky thinking about in our shitatorium.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it's good. I like it. Winning.
We're winning. As I say, get this perfect. It's just a shame that the series of Dragon Den's finished, because I'm sure Deborah Meaden will be all over this.
Oh, she loves it, and especially if you put an environmental twist on there as well. Of course, she's well into that.
Yeah, yeah, and a bit of sense of something as well. It'll sort it. Right, we are done, because I know. Sam's got his kids are literally standing outside the school. Like, remember that episode where Bart Simpson's waiting. That's what it is. He's literally outside the house. It's like the clouds from Dubai are practically over his kids' head as we speak. So he's got to run and get them. So we'll be back next week for another interesting episode of the 1878 FM podcast. Thanks for joining us. See you later.